Good evening. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, with Keith Kennedy. You're listening to Now We're Talking. Keith, we're back. This is our 10th episode of Now We're Talking.
Mm-hmm.
We brought the balloons, although we haven't inflated them.
No, I'm afraid of balloons.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I had one when I was in Scouts, or the equivalent of Scouts in Newfoundland.
Brownies?
Yeah. We have something weird in Newfoundland. It's called Church Lads Brigade.
That's long-winded.
Yeah.
And but you guys talk fast, like, out there, so yeah. It's probably about the same.
Oh, it takes no time at all.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a religious Scouts.
Okay.
And we had a party, and we were blowing up balloons, and one exploded in my face. And so fear maybe is a big word, but now when I'm around balloons, I don't like touching them, and I'm afraid they're going to blow up.
What about blowing up balloons? Inflating balloons?
Yeah, I can't do it.
You can't do it?
No.
Can you remember the last time you attempted to?
It's been a really long time.
Or was that the last time?
No, I'm sure as an adult I've tried, but you get to a point
you're worried about the threshold.
Yeah, the threshold, but my threshold is so small. I blow up a balloon like the size of a fist and I'm out.
What about changing guitar strings? Similar?
No, I'm fine with that.
Okay, now that's interesting because that can happen too. Concern that I had when I was first putting guitar strings, and that was a concern I had to overcome.
Yeah.
But of course, you never had the trauma specifically related to the snapping of a guitar string. So there you go.
I had one snap and come close to my face, but yeah. I just wore a welding mask from that.
There you go. And you just keep your face extremely close, knowing you have the protection of the mask.
That's why that Buckethead guy wears the bucket on his head, that guitarist.
Oh, right.
Because he just started wearing it to change that, and he was playing so often.
He's so good at doing it.
And he just left the bucket
without
on his
having
head.
The visual. He can do it in the blind.
Yeah, it's just the same as tuning a guitarist.
So I don't know if this is, as I say, we have the balloons, but they're not blown up. I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Had I blown them up, for example, while you're in the room, it might have made you uncomfortable.
Yeah, maybe.
Now I feel like I shouldn't blow them up during the show.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make for much of a party.
No, now it's just I'm afraid I'm going to wheel over them in the chair.
Okay.
Yeah, we messed up.
Well, I'm not worried about the expense of the balloons, but the helium tank was...
Yeah, that's too bad. We shouldn't have got three of those.
That was an exorbitant expense. I've said it before and I'll say it again, that some of the misallocation of the funds for the show.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to go do an Olympic correspondent thing. And
that's right. Remember, you went to Europe for Euro Cup.
Yeah.
And we actually haven't talked that much about the Olympics. We talked about it a little bit last week. But we didn't get into the fact that, we vetoed the idea of you going down to Rio.
Because I went to Mexico, I went to Europe.
Yeah.
And now there's no money left.
Too much travel too soon.
Yeah. So the Olympics, sorry everyone, I hope you got your Olympic coverage elsewhere.
Or if we hadn't got these helium tanks, you could have at least got part of the way to Rio.
Yeah. But maybe I'll get to do a correspondent about something else. Some other, bigger sporting event.
Or just wait till the next Summer Olympics.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure we'll still be doing the show
then. Or the next Euro Cup. There you go.
What do you think our budget will be like for the show in 4 years?
Is billions wrong?
Billions of what?
Oh, ducats?
Billions of aged ducats.
Drachmas?
Keith, before the show, you were mentioning to me that you recently reread George Orwell's 1984.
Rereading,
Oh, you're currently rereading it.
Yeah,
In the form of an audiobook.
Yep.
This is the first, I assume you've read this book multiple times. I also assume it's the first time you've listened to the book.
Yeah,
is that true?
That's what's interesting about it. I'd finished a book. I just read Ian Banks for the first time. You've ever heard of him?
No.
He's the guy that people keep recommending to me for years, 10 years. People in all shades and colors of readers that I know will just say, this
contemporary
Ian Banks
author?
Guy. Yeah, I guess so. I think he's been doing it for a long time. And he's got Ian Banks, he does maybe more normal stuff. And as Ian M. Banks, he does these science fiction books.
That's funny. He mixes it up by throwing in the middle
initial.
Yeah, just
throws the M. I thought that was so funny because obviously he's the same guy. And Ian spelled I-A-I-N.
Oh, he spells it differently.
Which is different than you normally.
That's such a strange way to have a pseudonym.
I know, it's weird. Anyway, so I finally read one of his books and I was just sometimes it happens with the audiobooks, you spur of the moment need a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And I had put 1984 in my list because it's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read it a couple of times and I've seen the movie, so it's kind of like a warm blanket. But the reason I decided was I thought this might be a totally different experience to have my favorite book pumped into my ears.
And we've talked about you doing the audiobook thing before, and you've listened to, I think, over 100, probably approaching 100 by now?
Not quite, because I only started last year, but I did it over 30 last year. And
you're marching to 100.
Yeah,
you're going to get there.
Yeah, I've got 20 this year.
I think we've also talked about how important I imagine it must be to have a reader that appeals to you.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like with such a classic work of fiction? Well, who's reading it?
Well, it's funny.
Is it a guy named Ian? Or
no one I know is reading
Ian
George
R.
Orwell.
Banks, yes. The second.
I haven't had a problem with the readers. I have a few friends who do audiobooks, and they're really I wouldn't say picky, but they've had problems here and there. I've only ever had one guy that I didn't like, and it was because of his cadence. He had this way of always finishing his sentences in the same way, no matter what the sentence was, and it started to make me crazy.
Was it just some guy's self-published audiobook, or was it a proper book, and they just hired a guy?
That's what was nuts. It was a proper book.
It doesn't sound like you had an unrealistic need that wasn't being met. It sounds like, objectively, that might have not worked for a lot of people.
Yeah, I just think this
one. I'm surprised, you know, it sounds like if you've only had the one occurrence, I'm surprised at that, and I'm encouraged by that.
Yeah, I don't think I think it's a personality thing. Like, I think some people will be susceptible and some won't. A few times I've heard a guy and thought, oh, this is going to be a problem. And then I just start listening to the story and I forget. Right. And I just adjust to it. I think for a lot of people, you just let it ride for a few chapters and you're probably going to be fine.
So how far are you into 1984?
I'm not that far, like four chapters, I think. Okay. Which is not, it's like a tenth of the way through.
Probably. What's it like to be listening to that book?
Yeah, it's really cool.
How long has it been since you read it before? Actually, that's an interesting point.
I don't know. I read... maybe 10 years?
I mean, and the reason I asked that question is a theme that's come up a lot in the show, so I don't know if we're covering some ground that we've already discussed in the past, but a lot has occurred in the last 10 years related to the topic of Big Brother.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what it's like to re-examine that book.
Well, it's funny because you could have a whole discussion about just pop culture things that have used George Orwell in the last 10 years, let alone like actual real world applications of the things he was... talking about back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, right away when you hear the term Big Brother, of course, that's much more common. The first time I read 1984, I'd never heard that term before.
There had never been a reality show called Celebrity Big Brother 12.
Exactly. And thoughts, things like the thought crimes and the double think and all that stuff, there's been a lot of bleed into the real world over the years because 1984 is such a popular book. But mainly in science fiction movies and other science fiction stories, you see a lot of that, his version of the sort of post-apocalyptic world, if you could even call it that, where there's a figurehead, everyone's limited by either drugs or propaganda or indoctrination to be good little workers. I mean, that's really pervasive. So going back to that, one of the originals and perhaps the best, I mean, I'm a big fan of this book. I'm not as big a fan of Aldous Huxley, which is the other author that people give a lot of credit to for...
Imagining a Brave New World.
Yeah, exactly. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so I just think that I think Orwell's bled out even further since I last read it, and it's really cool. I would recommend anyone at all and their dog to read 1984, probably on a regular basis.
It's interesting that we, you know, arrived at the year 1984, and you know, the people had the opportunity to make comparisons to how society had unfolded relative to that book being written after the war in the late 40s, I think.
Geez, I actually don't know.
I think it was just after the war, so it was.
Sounds right.
It had been around for well over 30 years, and that was a sort of a benchmark. And man, so much has happened since 1984 that, in terms of the internet, is the most obvious thing. Just how we communicate, how we consume and share information. And it's interesting for me, if I was rereading it, I'd be interested to hear how he describes what ubiquitous surveillance looks like, because it would be from through the lens of somebody in the 1940s. The interesting thing is the details, it's expressed in different ways, with Wi-Fi and internet and all these concepts that he couldn't have refined as an idea. But fundamentally, having a TV in every home, or microphones that can listen to you. It's expressed in a different way.
Yeah,
but it's happened.
Yeah,
it's
and so completely you have, like a lot of those great authors from that time period, especially the science fiction guys like Isaac Asimov. I'm a huge fan of him as well. They're closer than you'd think to the real thing. So, for example, like the metaphor in that book is that but really applies everywhere else is that the guy to write this journal he's writing that you're not allowed to do, he's just hiding in the corner. Because his apartment was built in such a way that there was a spot where maybe there was supposed to be a bookshelf, he says. But he hides in this corner so that the TV can't see him. And that's because the television screen, which everyone has.
Is a camera.
Is a camera as well.
Yeah.
Right? So how close is that to the real thing?
You know, when I saw the images going back a few years, it's become standard by now that there's large lineups at the Apple stores for the latest phone or whatever, the latest products. And when I would see those images and when I thought about how predictable those images became on a yearly basis or maybe even more so for the latest product, I thought I had a moment where I realized, well, this is fascinating because it's even more pervasive than Orwell had imagined. It isn't the government having to, if you think about the infrastructure for placing these televisions in everybody's home, it's people lining up to spend their disposable income to purchase those tools.
Yeah.
That is interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a much more subtle indoctrination, like, and one that maybe even the smartest minds couldn't have foreseen.
Exactly. Something that you couldn't have, you know, the most Machiavellian mind couldn't have achieved that. Or conceptualize it or execute it logistically. But it's, yeah, it's interesting to think that not only will the people be tolerant of that technology being in their homes, but they will line up to spend a lot of their disposable income.
Which is not not different, again, than scenes in 1984, like when they make them all exercise and you have to stand in front of your screen and do the exercises that are being, everyone doing the same thing at the same time. Just, that's a lot like lining up to buy a product.
Yeah.
That,
it's interesting.
Automatons.
Yeah. 1984 is such an iconic piece of literature. 2001, such an iconic film. And we've arrived at both of those years. Yeah. Is there another one on the horizon that I'm not aware of?
There's probably a lot.
I mean,
I've read so many that I can't
even... In terms of the title of the book or film?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. I don't know. Not to talk about
I should have asked you
know.
This before the show.
I
we should have researched
it.
This.
Well, I've read so much science fiction that takes place in, like, probably every year.
Yeah. Well, that's another interesting point is when I think about watching movies in the 80s and into the 90s, it would be interesting for us to actually come up with a list of all the future years in films, some of which we've passed,
right.
Some of which are on the horizon, and some of which are still in the distant future. It's interesting to think about because sometimes, you know, you'd see a film that back in the 80s, the year, like for Terminator.
Yeah.
The year was 1997.
Yeah.
Which
like,
now is laughable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a lot of movies, I can't think of any, but they're set in the early 2000s.
Of course.
First or second decade.
Yeah.
But I bet they were coming up on some other...
I think 2020 is like a big one. I think I've seen that
2020,
one a lot.
Well, it's a very poetic kind of number,
Yeah, and it makes sense that you just, if you're not thinking too hard, you just need a date in the future. You just what's 20 again?
I'm looking up to see when Blade Runner is set. Do you know?
I just watched Blade Runner, and I do. I actually have the book on my shelf right now. I just borrowed from a friend because I've never read it, and I still don't know the answer.
I'm going to look it up. I'm trying to find it. If you know the answer, give us a call at 604-822-CITR. See if you can beat me to the clock. I'm currently looking through the Wikipedia entry, and I'm trying to find it.
It's funny. I would love to meet a person who remembered all that kind of stuff because that's such a strange talent to say, I saw the movie, and I remember, I don't even remember, like, the city. And you know, in the beginning, it always shows you, like, Los Angeles, 1978 or whatever. I don't remember any of that stuff. I don't know where things or when they take place. But there are people who actually remember that stuff.
Yeah, I'm so obsessed with dates and chronology. I really think in those terms. Blade Runner is set in, at least the beginning of the film, November 2019.
Oh, so
if you remember seeing that movie for the first time, you probably thought, 2019, like, what will the world be like? Mm.
And now 40 years.
Now it's, there'll be a Trump presidency.
Yeah.
And we will not be flying in cars.
No, and everything will be ashes.
Yes, but there will still be a Trump presidency.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that everything is in ashes. Yeah. Well, initially we were speaking about you reading 1984, and I've kind of, the conversation has drifted a little bit from that. Is there anything else you want to say about your experience of reading / listening to 1984 right now?
I don't think anything that anybody wants to hear other than my high praise of it. I think it's bloody brilliant. I mean, if you don't know the book, if I can take 30 seconds here to sort of sell it to people, if you don't know why you should read it, the main character's job in 1984 is to rewrite history so it looks like history was always the new way. So if the big brother, the government, says there's going to be 145 million, I think it's actually 142 in the book, pairs of new boots next year, and then they only get to 65 million, it's this guy's job to go back in the original newspaper where that was where that was recorded and rewrite it.
Change the record.
So that it looks like, oh, actually, they said 57, so there's a 5 million surplus.
So the government is always exceeding
expectations.
And there's no reason
right.
to ever feel like there could be a better one.
And there's no record of the original paper, ever. They get rid of that, and that's now the new record. And that's his job.
Another example of imagining the future and how, in a way, that might be something that's more possible now with digital culture.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, you could say that that's absurd now because everything can be documented and you can take screenshots or whatever.
Yeah.
But in a way, things are more editable now mm-hmm. than they might have been in the past when there was paper.
Well, again, there's a lot of comparable skills there. This guy's just really good at that. And I'm sure there's people now who are just really good at that, about finding those codes and figuring out ways, algorithms, to seek out some of that information. I mean, it has happened where people have sued Google or complained about things and had pictures taken down and had things erased from the internet. For a while there, movie studios were doing a good job of that. When something would get leaked, it would all get pulled down. They'd send out all those cease and desist warnings, and mm-hmm. things would get pulled down really quickly. That's not to say that it was completely erased from the internet, but I'm sure that there are people who are talented at it, just like this man in 1984 is. And when you're behind the curtain, my last selling point for the book, then it starts to mess with the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how do you accept it all when you're part of the machine changing it and you know? And that's what doublethink, that famous term, is in that book, is to know a thing and know another thing, and that they counter each other logically but accept them both as truth. That's what he has to do every day, and it starts to mess with him, hence the conflict that rises into a wonderful story that I won't ruin for you.
Have you read any of his other works?
I read Animal Farm.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Which I think is, it's like The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings. It's like a simpler, more straightforward, but has
he's a two-hit wonder.
Feel.
I mean, I don't mean to diminish other literary works that he wrote, but let's be honest, well, those are two iconic.
Those are two World Series winning home runs.
Yeah.
So hard to feel bad about that. I mean, he wrote some essays that I think are pretty popular among real hardcore Orwellians.
Yeah.
It's funny because that doesn't really, it makes you think of something else entirely. That's how impactful he was on the culture. That doesn't just mean a fan of Orwell, that means something entirely different.
Yeah, it sounds like you're endorsing mass surveillance or something.
It's like saying being Machiavellian just means you're a fan of Machiavelli. Not the case, sir.
Yeah. Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking. This is the 10th episode. We're here celebrating in the studio.
Woo!
We've got balloons in the studio that we have not inflated. That's my fault. I forgot to do it. Keith indicated to me something I didn't know until today, which is that he has a fear of blowing up the balloons.
Yeah, it's like a tense...
Or even being around them being blown up.
Yeah, I get uncomfortable around balloons.
There was an incident when he was a religious boy
in
Newfoundland.
A religious child.
That just goes to show you, folks, something. I'm not sure what, but it goes to show you something.
Shout out to all my Church Lads Brigade brethren
out there. I wonder where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that.
Not in the church.
But we are celebrating with or without. Well, as I said also, we have these helium tanks, which were meant to be used to inflate the balloons. Maybe we could just suck on some helium.
Yeah, I think it's dangerous. As amusing as that would be for people to hear us sound silly.
Okay.
Because we never normally sound silly.
Right. And there is a button here on this mixer. It's really tempting to depress this button right now.
To make it sound like we have helium.
To make it sound.
But helium can be dangerous.
Everything we just said there leading to the idea that there's helium that we could inhale, it really sounded like a protracted, like long-winded way to do like a really schlocky radio thing.
Yeah.
But no.
Turns out, we're not doing
that. I don't have access to that button yet.
No,
I'm still on probation.
And I'm sketchy about inhaling the helium because I've heard some
horror
stories.
So that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But aside from all that, we're celebrating 10 episodes. We intend to celebrate every 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Now, whether we will or whether we won't remains to be seen. But hey, just in case we don't celebrate the 20th, or if there is no 20th, we forget, or whatever, or if you come in early, I'm blowing up the balloons and it scares you away. Who knows? Let's live in the now, for goodness sakes.
Mm-hmm.
And let's celebrate 10 episodes.
Oh, there's also the technicality that we did an episode together before we had the official show.
Yeah, there's all those asterisks.
There's an asterisk there, yeah.
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 One of the most annoying things about the asterisk isn't just the fact that it modifies records, for example, sports records,
right, like,
or that information.
Steroid use.
It's just saying the word asterisk, plural. Asterisks.
Yeah. It's one of those words that should have another form, like asteri or something.
People want it to be asterix or asterixes or asteri.
Asterices?
Or asterices.
It might actually be a thing.
Folks, we're covering all sorts of important topics here today on Now We're Talking. And we do invite you to call in. We don't do that often on the show, but give us a call at 604-822-2487 if you want to comment on our discussion of Orwell, our usage of the word Orwellian, or anything at all. We'll put you on the air. We'll talk to you. We'll see what's going on. I see that there is a Jewish wedding outside here. We're broadcasting from UBC, in case you don't know that. And this is the last broadcast we'll do before the end of summer.
Mm.
And every time Keith and I come on campus, there is not a Jewish wedding happening outside.
Yeah, it's pretty lifeless area.
But there was a lively Jewish wedding. I say that because I saw a lot of yarmulkes in the wedding party. And also, this every day we've come this summer, I think, without exception, it's been quite sunny.
Yeah.
It certainly hasn't rained. As soon as we came here, it began to rain. Mm-hmm. I felt badly because I can imagine all the planning that goes into it.
Yeah,
but again, the men were wearing yarmulkes.
Yes.
So
which serves more than one purpose.
Now we know that maybe Judaism.
Yeah, the right way to go.
The right way to go in the rain. It's like we're just fishing for episode titles.
Yeah.
For episode 10.
All my bros in the Church Lads Brigade are really upset.
Yeah, right they now. Are. They are, but they know that that didn't work out well for you.
No.
They knew as soon as that balloon incident happened, it was time for you to find a new religion.
Yeah.
Little did they know it would take this long.
No, and that it would be comedy.
Yeah.
Woo.
Or Judaism. What else? You want to talk about what happened in the news this week, I guess? That's another thing we could do, right?
Sure.
Jeff and Keith present this week's news. Now, topical.
So what did happen in the news this week? Were you monitoring the news?
I wasn't.
I mean, monitoring the news makes it sound like you were, you know, really mindful on a daily basis of what's going on. But anything that you noticed?
Well, one thing I noticed, which you'll probably have to cut me off on because it's boring, is that Facebook changed the way they showed me the news.
Okay, so what's that about?
So instead of showing me a headline and then a little blurb underneath, it began to show me, I assume this happened to everybody, but I don't know, so I'll speak for myself. It showed me a headline and then how many people were interested in viewing it.
Mm.
So it said, like, a name I don't know, like Tucker McGinty, 1.1 million viewed. And I thought, well, this is a blessing in disguise because now I don't feel the need to look into who that guy is.
You're like,
because
I'm not
swayed by how many people care.
But you feel like that's the point, is a lot of people would be like, oh, that's a high number, therefore it must be.
I guess it gets more clicks or something. But I just thought, what a relief. I'm not going to get depressed before I start my work today. Yeah.
I think we have actually discussed before that is the primary source for you to learn about the news is Facebook.
That's how I get my headlines for sure. And as I've just described, the headline's not enough. I need a little blurb, and then if it's something that I think is relevant to me, I'll go look at it.
How did you, if at all, how did you consume the news before social networking? Did you ever watch news on television? Did you ever get the newspaper or just read the newspaper, radio? What did you do in the past?
Are we not the perfect age for people who just never watch the news? I don't know how you are about that, but I feel like we're the generation that left the TV news behind.
Well, break it down for me. What's the history of you in the news? So when you were
I don't think I've ever. I remember my grandfather watching the news like,
the nightly
every
news?
Day. Yeah, like around supper time.
But as you got older, mom, dad, no?
Maybe a little bit. My dad.
But it wasn't a tradition.
Not really. I mean, it's still newspapers. I think that my dad was probably more of a newspaper guy.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't think I've ever sat down and watched the nightly news. And then the evening news, like the late one that comes on 11 o'clock, very early on, I realized the first time I ever saw one of those, like, what's in your water? Tune in. And I was like, no, not interested in your salesmanship and your crap and your local stories. You know,
that sounds like American affiliate news to me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like Seattle.
Well, that's what happens late at night, I guess, when you're trying to find, like, Friday the 13th on cable.
Right,
that's
like the late night movie that starts after the news
exactly.
or something.
Yeah, so I don't think I ever watched TV news, so I guess it's just been Internet City for me.
And no newspapers? I mean, you're a literary guy.
Well, I'm definitely a guy. It's funny that you say that about newspapers. It makes me think of times when I've seen the headline on the newspaper and got the newspaper because, like, the same way I do Facebook now.
Really?
Where I see the headline, so I want the newspaper because I want to read the thing, and it doesn't matter that it's paper or not.
You used to do that on occasion?
I still will.
If
I'm walking by a bank of those things and there's a headline that interests me, I'll grab one of those papers, often the free ones because I'm cheap, but yeah, that sort of thing. I won't say, oh, I'll look that up later. I'll actually get the thing still. So I guess I am still stuck in the past.
No internet news for you either. Not social networking. So as far as going to a website that
I think
gives you headlines.
I think I got, especially movie stuff. As a pop culture guy, I've often sought out movie news. And so most of my news sites are movie sites.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I remember when I first got email, I think it was like Netscape Navigator style email. And they had a few little headlines here and there on their homepage.
Hmm.
And that was probably the seed. The way I'm talking about it, it makes me feel like I'm a guy who never looked at the news for my whole adult life until Facebook came along.
It's interesting because you're not, by your own admission, well-traveled.
Nope.
And you're telling me now, again, by your own admission, you're not worldly as far as monitoring the news.
Yeah. I need to have books pumped into my head.
Yeah. So why don't you strike me as more ignorant?
What does that word mean?
Say that again slower.
Yes. Can you put that on my
and
Facebook,
with more
please?
Feeling, please? It's interesting.
Yeah. I guess I am painting a picture of an ignoramus.
Or it just makes you think, well, how does one become aware of what's happening in the world? Maybe it's through conversations with others.
Well, I was a peeping Tom.
So you were just reading over people's
reading
shoulders.
Reading over people's naked shoulders.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So if we just forget about the naked shoulders, you're a big news guy.
I will not forget about the naked shoulders.
So, okay, anything happened this week that we want to discuss? I'm trying to think. I mean, anything that I care to... I mean, there's the presidential election, as always. Nothing really there that
we
want to touch.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of that stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. What a segment, eh?
Yeah, this is the segment.
It's funny when the segment of the show that has the music is not fruitful.
I had a few things. And now they're just gone.
Hey, folks, once again, we invite you to give us a call at 604-822-2487. Here's your action item. Tell us about something that happened in the news this week. We'll discuss with you on the air on Now We're Talking with Jeff Bryant, with Keith Kennedy, as always. We'll talk about it. We're waiting. Hello?
It's going to be complete silence until someone tells us what to talk about.
See, now what's happening is people out there saying, I would love to get involved and move the conversation along. I've got some great ideas. Oh, wait a minute, what are they? Or maybe they just want to hear the phone number again. It's 604-822-2487. An easier way to remember that, 604-UBC-CITR. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell one thing we can talk about while we're trying to remember what happened in the news is that I get my news elsewhere from Bill Maher and John Oliver.
That's true. That's true enough.
And Bill Maher's on holiday.
Okay.
And John Oliver talked about Ryan Lochte.
Which we talked about last week at length.
So I'm going through all of the things in my head of where I get my news from.
Well, you've mentioned that to me before, and of course that's what we're missing there, is that that might be an example. You talk about how consumption of the news has shifted based on a new demographic.
Yeah, totally.
And I think there's a large portion of our demographic are people who receive the news through the filter of somebody observing the news and commenting on it. Probably satirically.
Yeah. Speaking of, I just thought of one.
Ah.
Jimmy Kimmel is the way I got this one.
Okay.
Apparently, he did a stunt. I don't know if you know about this.
Mm.
He did a stunt on a show with Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
A stunt.
Was this the thing about her being healthy?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw the headline.
So this is the topical part, is that in the news it's become a bit of a thing. I think Dr. Drew commented on it as well a few weeks back about Hillary Clinton not being as healthy as she's claiming she is. I don't know if she's actually claimed to be healthy or not.
But. Well, I'm not sure. I imagine it has something to do with Trump. I think one of the things that he's doing right now is he's elevating the idea that he's very healthy.
Yeah.
And furthering that idea she's not as a reason to vote for him.
I don't know anything about that, but I assumed for sure that this was like a new tactic.
So what did they do?
So they just had, I think, I didn't actually see the segment. I assumed it was something totally silly where they had a pickle jar.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, can you open the pickle jar to prove that you're strong enough to run the country? And she opened it. Ha, 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 the end. But there were some people in the States. I guess they're probably Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be, what's the right word, dumbasses?
Could be.
Could be dumbasses.
Those GOPers.
Who went, I can't believe this. That was obviously pre-opened. That's not what it looks like to open a pickle jar.
It's the equivalent of OJ and the glove must fit or you must acquit.
But the idea that anyone would think that Jimmy Kimmel was actually trying to prove that she was healthy enough to run for president by doing it was a joke.
You know, what would be interesting would be to invert that experiment and for Trump to do the same thing and to see whether or not liberals would complain about that too. It would be interesting.
Which I would just make a bunch of jokes about his hand size and things like that.
Yes. It might be a more nuanced rejection.
Or it would be, like I said, again, we'd make fun of it because it's comedic. Whereas what I read, and I'm sure there's lots of different reactions, but the feed that I read was just right-wing people going nuts about how this was staged and they'd opened the jar before for her to prove it, not understanding that this was just silliness, that there is no proof in anyone's fitness to do anything in a stunt like opening a pickle jar.
You know, it's so interesting to observe the duality, the polarity of left and right politics when you yourself are clearly in one camp more than, as opposed to the other, not more than the other, entirely as opposed to the other, because perhaps us being Canadian and American politics being more extreme gives us more of an opportunity to try to think about it in a detached way.
Yeah.
Because you're observing
yeah.
something
yeah,
much
there's
larger.
Yeah, a little bit of objectivity.
A little bit. But for me, I find myself thinking if I see a bunch of articles explaining how a bunch of foolish right-wingers interpret it this way, I'm starting to, like, while still maintaining my assumption that I'm right and they're wrong, it just occurs to me for the first time, speaking of news and what's in the news, is, well, what am I reading? What is the source here? And isn't there an agenda here to portray the other group as the wrong people?
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, maybe a large percentage of Republicans didn't think that.
Of course.
And yeah. what it's focusing on is how some people did, but presenting it as if this is what they mm-hmm. think.
Yeah.
And I think about that because, I mean, this might be obvious, but it reminds me how almost how satisfying it is for things to be black and white in us and them. You know, like Nazis yeah. bad, allies good.
Yeah.
That's a nice and it's almost like that's a nice easy one that yeah. really helps you to buy into
yeah,
the idea
the
of black and white. Yeah, and it is an easy one, but you realize how automatic it becomes to sort of abide yeah. by that. And as I say, I'm totally predisposed to, of course, especially with an example like Donald Trump, it seems so extreme.
Yeah.
It's very easy
yeah.
to not even bother to have this conversation I'm trying to have
and
right
his
now.
His extremity leads us to be extreme the
yeah.
other way, right?
But I just wonder, as I said, the experiment would be if you inverted it, would the Republican media mm-hmm. manage to, you know, have a bunch of articles cherry-picking a bunch of liberals who
yeah.
thought this, that, or the other,
yeah,
and then it just always goes back and forth yeah. and nobody listens to each other ever?
There's no doubt it takes two to tango. They're just tangling, they're not in the room together. So it's
yeah.
pointless. That's why it's so silly. And there's also no doubt that there are Republicans who totally would not think that. There's Republicans who thought, oh, that's a silly joke about the pickle jar, and that was all they thought.
Yeah.
There's obvious that the people who are putting that on a pedestal as an example of how ridiculous left-wingers are, those people are at fault. The people who are cherry-picking those stories to make them look that way are at fault, and there are equivalents of that on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
There must be. Now, like you said, because we lean to that left side, I'm just not as interested to see the ridiculous on that side, right? I don't see it as well. There's blinders, and you just have to be aware of that, right? And I think that's why they can't talk to each other, is because for some reason, especially at the highest levels of government, they're afraid to seem weak, so they can't. They have to be so extreme in everything they do. They can't go, yeah, okay. And even to the point where I've seen Republicans on Bill Maher, for example, say things like, well, Democrats do that too. And it sounds horrible. It sounds like a cop-out. It's true to some degree, no matter what they're talking about, that there are corrupt politicians and people who cherry-pick stories on both sides of the aisle. But it just sounds bad because they're so vilified. Republicans are so vilified that even them suggesting that, you're like, shut up.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're talking about. Only Republicans do this horrible stuff.
And it really feels like even if it is done on both sides, it's really done poorly on the other side. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like there's a lack of... it's hard to know
maybe
whether...
that's what we like about the left wing is that they're just a little less ridiculous, a little less
just that
transparent.
It seems more successful in its attempts at humor, but it's impossible.
Mm-hmm. They also have all the actors on their side and they're beautiful people and we like them.
Yeah.
That's how shallow it is, folks.
Keith,
here in Canada.
I just want to point out that there's rumors out there floating around. We've received a few calls and I've looked at some emails. There's rumors that there is a woman in the lobby at the station that we have literally put to sleep with our broadcast. It's not true. She's simply just
I was
taking
wondering
the load
what
off.
You were looking at.
She's just lying down. She's not completely asleep and she prefers to listen to the show. You know,
are you sure,
I think
are
it's
you
kind
sure
of like,
she's not asleep?
Is there anything, Keith, that you enjoy, whether it's eating or anything that you like to say where you deny other senses to improve upon the sense in question? So if you're eating something, do you ever close your eyes or maybe put your fingers in your ears to really focus on?
Well, I remember my dad turning down the radio to look for an address in the car.
Right. That's something. That works.
Like, that helps.
Yeah.
We really did put that lady to sleep. I was wondering what you were looking at. You know what? It's funny. I half expected to turn around and see my wife standing there or something.
Yeah.
Because
no, that's not your wife.
You started to smile.
That's not your wife.
That's not my wife.
Oh, folks. Folks.
She's not responding. She can hear us out there. This is part of the studio.
You know what she's doing, Keith? I'm gonna tell you. Do you want to know what she's doing right now?
Sure.
She's celebrating. This is our 10th episode of Now We're Talking.
She is the equivalent
and
of our...
And it is cause for celebration. And everybody does it in their own way. And I think this really actually is an opportunity to draw attention to an important concept. People are going to celebrate in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, for us, we're not going to have balloons. We're going to attempt to reel and think better of it. People might be so interested in the things we have to say that they might want to open their ears wide, close their eyes, and lie down. And who knows? People might be having a Jewish wedding, you know, simultaneously because they want to, they say, I love this thing. I love this thing.
Yeah.
Let's put them together.
Where should we have our celebration? Next to the Keith and
Jeff
radio show. As close
to the Keith and Jeff show as possible.
Yeah. Which is actually called Now We're Talking.
Which shows that they're not consistent listeners whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. So the lesson here is if you're going to have a wedding, don't worry about us.
Yeah.
I mean, you can invite us, but don't try to have it near us, especially if you don't even know what the show is called. Focus on your wife or your husband.
Yeah.
Focus on the yarmulkes. Focus on doing it on a day
pets.
Where it's not raining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about some shows? Can we do that? Some television shows, some internet television shows?
I would love to do that.
There's a couple that come to mind. I'm not sure. Let's take a moment and start by talking about the show Stranger Things. I assume you've seen it?
Yes, I have.
The look on your face of just, I'm assuming it was basically a blank expression and a stillness that knowing you as well as I do, and really assuming that you know about the show and you've seen it, must mean I'm very stoked to talk about it. I need to take a moment to... Or it means you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, you were right the first time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this show, Stranger Things. It was something I was vaguely aware of. I saw that it was a new show on presented by Netflix. Just from the poster alone, I kind of got a sense that it kind of reminded me of Super 8.
It looked
like something that was a nostalgic homage. Again, assuming that it was a new... show,
yeah,
because it had the Netflix banner.
Yeah,
it looks like a new show, and it looks like it's channeling something from the past. Subsequent to that, I've actually watched the show and read a little bit about it. But tell me about this show, your impression of it, whether you knew about these Duffer dudes before, you feel about it, so how it was for you.
Yeah, the Duffer brothers are the guys who created it. Apparently, I think they directed all the episodes too. Did they?
Not all, but most.
Okay.
It's their show. Oftentimes the shows, I don't know how this works exactly, but you'll see a series. They'll have different directors for certain episodes, but ultimately it's their show.
Yeah, yeah. More and more that's the case nowadays, right?
Yeah.
With the whole showrunner position, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know anything about them either. They came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's another line of, what am I trying to say? Couple of brothers?
There's a lot of brother directors.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why didn't I just say it like that?
I don't know.
Where are we on that one, man?
I was still thinking about just looking out of the lobby and thinking, what are the different ways that people savor the show?
That's what I was trying to say. Like, in the long line of brother directors, here's more brothers. Anyway.
I guess what I want to know is, you've seen the show. What forewarning did you have about the show? In other words, was it just that arrived and you watched it and, whoa, what's this?
Did you know it was coming? I'll answer your questions
in the pipeline.
On your radio show. I didn't know anything about it, but I heard buzz.
Okay.
Saw a few articles that I didn't read because I didn't want it ruined for me. Heard that Winona Ryder was in it, which was cool. And saw a poster that obviously evoked this nostalgia that you're discussing, the Stand By Me.
Yeah, E.T. Goonies.
Yeah, Spielberg kind of. And
Schindler's List.
Yeah, very. The poster I saw was very Schindler's List.
No, but very, very much 80s Goonies, E.T., Stand By Me, like... boys on bicycles in mist.
And dealing with something mysterious.
Yeah, to something... It's interesting because you and I are of an age that now I look back and realize we were more or less of an age group that were those young boys hoping to have adventures.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I did have a bike.
Now 30 years later.
I did have an alien.
To see that was basically a subgenre that occurred at exactly the same time that we were that age.
Well, it's funny that you mention... what is it? Not 8mm. That's not right.
No.
That's Joel Schumacher's dark snuff film.
Oh,
movie.
Right. Super 8.
With Joaquin
Super
Phoenix.
8.
Thank
Very
you.
Different.
Very different film.
Yeah.
Don't get those mixed up. I thought Super 8 was not all that successful. I thought it felt kind of nostalgic, which was nice, but I didn't love it as a film. Stranger Things delivers where Super 8 did not, in my opinion. I think it hits all the right notes.
Mm.
I almost don't want to talk too much about it. I mean,
right.
A lot of people have seen it, and I'm very excited to discuss it. But basically, we need everyone to watch it and then call in and let me know, and then I can talk at length.
Is it possible for us to just request right now, if people don't want to hear us talk about the show, they cannot listen for the next 5 minutes?
Yeah.
And then we're allowed to talk about it?
Get a life. Go do something.
I mean, I know that you, more than anybody I know, are very serious about spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is understandable.
I blocked my aunt recently on Facebook. Because she spoiled the thing that I had no intention of ever watching.
Right.
But just, I can't handle it.
So what do we do in this situation? What if we want to talk about a show, but we don't want to spoil it for anybody? It just means we can't talk about it?
I think I can talk about it. I mean, I've written reviews before that are non-spoiler reviews, so I think I'm being a bit facetious.
So you can balance that.
We can talk about it.
Walk that line. Okay.
Yeah, let's walk that line.
Okay.
So in the final episode, these are the characters that die.
So we're basically going to reverse engineer the show in a reverse chronology, starting with, wow, this is how it ended? First of all, I want to say some of the performances, in particular for me, the chief. A lot of people think it's the sheriff. You're so used to the sheriff being the sort of policing figure.
But he's the chief. Yeah, and he's got that Indiana Jones hat.
Yeah. I thought he was great. Yeah. I've seen him in obviously he's been in a lot of movies usually as a secondary character.
But he had a lot of depth, didn't he?
Yeah, but that was a great role for him.
And I thought,
and he looks a lot like Dexter.
It's funny that you'd say that you liked him so much and hadn't seen him be a lead before, because I got that feeling right away from him in the first few episodes. I was like, is this guy really going to be able to carry the weight of this? Mm. And then he brought the heart and he brought the feels, and I really believed him. I thought he was great.
For me, that was one of the greatest things about the show.
Yeah, for me too. And I like Winona Ryder a lot, but she was sort of trapped in a corner in that show where she doesn't have a huge arc.
Yeah, she kind of did one thing, and you could say that she did it well. And she's almost, like, oh, good, she's not shoplifting.
She kind of She kind of represents the crisis of that story, in the sense that often really good stories sort of, you've heard this term before, scenes in movies, you want to come in late and end early.
Mm.
That sort of, those adages. So the idea is that you don't want to waste too much time in the beginning or at the end of a scene.
Mm.
And she was almost like that for this show. Like, it starts with her trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is a tough role, actually.
Yeah, and sort of ends with her that being sort of resolved in theory. And so she didn't have a chance to seem like anything other than a person in crisis. So you have to give her a little bit of...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that would be really difficult to do.
Yeah.
Even in a movie, but it's like you realize you kind of watch these shows as if it's a really long movie. And that's a long movie.
Yeah.
So these episodes are about 50 minutes long times 8 episodes. It's like a 6-hour, 7-hour movie.
Yeah, and that's why we love them. That's why people are binge-watching these things.
It's almost strange to think about watching a 90-minute feature film when you're watching something like this and enjoying that it's 4 or 5 times as long as that. It almost feels like, how do you develop a story in just 90 minutes? It almost feels like the feature film is
the new short story. Yeah. It's funny that you say that, not to bring it back to books too harshly, but I've always loved fantasy novels.
Mm.
And so that's very similar, right? Where like a regular book is about 100,000 words, you know, and a fantasy book is 300,000, 400,000
words. Wow, right. So the similar ratio.
Yeah, or sometimes, as you know, series of fantasy books.
Mm-hmm.
3, 6, 10, 15 fantasy
volumes.
Books. So it makes makes a lot of sense to me that people are binge-watching Game of Thrones for 10 episodes and feeling like it's one big movie, because that does exist.
Yeah.
We do have a format, the fantasy novel, where we take a lot of time with character, a lot of time with developed story, many, many characters, many arcs, and I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that people are into it and they dig it in a visual format. And you're right. I think that movies are now becoming a different thing in the canopy is not the right word.
I like it.
In the canopy
of love.
That is.
We just throw away the thread of the conversation just so we can have new, interesting phrases related to all income.
I don't even know what I was trying to find. It wasn't canon.
I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to find the episode title. It's like this new fishing game that we play. We're like, is it the canopy of love? I just want to say before I fail to slip it in, David Harbour is the actor. And of course, when somebody has been a very successful secondary character actor for a decade or two, you have no idea what their name is.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. His name's David Harbour.
Yeah.
And I feel like...
And now he deserves it.
Probably as the result of this. I wouldn't be surprised if people know his name. That's such an interesting thing.
Totally.
You can be a very successful actor and nobody has a clue. They wouldn't know your name, even if they've seen you in many films, if their life depended on it.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know his name, and hopefully... it sounds like they're going to do another series, and it's going to be a continuation of the first series as opposed to a new story.
Yeah, Strangerer Things.
And how you kind of question, how far can they Yeah, extrapolate
how,
and take
how
that.
Strange how strange is this going to get?
Yeah, how is it going to get?
Hey, Duffers, listen
Dufferer,
up.
The Duffer.
Let's keep a lid on the strangeness.
Okay, how about Fear the Walking Dead? Is this a show that you've watched in the past? I know that right now that's the second half of the second season has just started. Do you follow this show?
Please describe my reaction to that in comparison to my reaction to the other thing.
Yes, the first one, it seemed that you were so stoked. Mm-hmm. There was this stillness.
Yeah.
This quietude that's other people would take it as you being having a stroke or
but because you know me so well.
I knew that you were that I was, it seemed you were stoked.
I was gearing up to
this
speak.
Seems a little like exasperation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now
is it this version of, is it the version of exasperation where you don't even bother to watch the show or you do watch the show and you're annoyed that you're watching
No,
show?
It's nuanced. It's nuanced exasperation. It's because I don't want to explain it at length, but I'll be brief.
Yeah.
I'm a huge zombie guy because I'm a huge horror guy.
Yes.
And I grew up in a time where there were like 7 zombie movies that were worth watching.
Yeah.
It was like what Romero did and like Lucio Fulci and like I think Peter Jackson's Brain Dead.
It wasn't a cultural phenomenon.
No.
It was a thing.
You had to, if you love zombie movies, I mean, I made a friend, my buddy Anthony, we became fast friends because of a t-shirt he was wearing. And I remember him showing him a scene from a zombie movie that I loved. And I'm sure we bonded over other things, but that's a central thing because even at that time, which was like 10 years ago, maybe a little bit less, 7 years ago, even then it wasn't so big. There was a few new ones, like the Zack Snyder remake of Dawn of the Dead had come out. And
that was very popular.
Yeah, and 28 Days Later had come out. So the fast zombie thing was just starting.
Yeah, which what you'll notice is now kind of fallen by the wayside, right?
But
didn't really
But know. As you all may have noticed by just looking out your window and having eyes, there's a
zombies
lot
zombies are everywhere.
Zombies are bloody everywhere. It's ridiculous. Everyone and their dog and their zombie dog love zombie movies. And so I'm...
Which, as you say, is not just like the last year or two. This is really, in my mind, Dawn of the Dead really represents, supported by 28 Days Later. But I feel like 2004 Dawn of the Dead remake, to me, represents a sort of the beginning of the mainstream obsession with it.
It really
which
did.
Seems, I don't, maybe there's been some ebbs and flows, but it feels like it's continued for over a decade.
Oh, yeah, it's been absurd to the point where people like myself are a little bit tired of it.
Okay,
because
so
when you used to have a zombie movie, it's just like any genre that you're a fan of. When a zombie movie comes up, you go, I love that, I'll watch it. When you get to the point where someone goes, there's a zombie movie coming out, and you're like, I don't care, that's saturated, brother. That's like really bad if you don't care about the thing you used to because there's a 99% chance that it's going to be crap.
Well, let's rewind for a second to 2010 when there was a lot of promotion for The Walking Dead.
Yes.
So how were you feeling when you heard that there was some... zombie TV show coming out.
Well, that's part of my exasperation about having to explain this briefly because I knew about The Walking Dead from the comic books.
Right, went back a few years before that.
Yeah, and the beauty of those was that they were very much a return to the Romero universe.
Okay, so when you heard there was a show for those, were you optimistic it would be faithful to the comics and it would be a good thing?
I was optimistic it would be faithful to comics, though it's not necessary. And I was also optimistic that we were returning to what I had loved in zombie films, which was zombies not being scary because they're running at you to eat your face. Zombies are scary because they're unstoppable.
Yeah,
they're the perfect
coming.
Metaphor for horror.
Yeah.
You can't defeat it. And so going back to that, and I had read 3 or 4 volumes of the comic book and I really liked it. I think that's how many I'd read. And so now to get to this whole next show.
So to be clear, with The Walking Dead, without getting into the different seasons, essentially you were optimistic, it's been good, you've enjoyed overall. Now they've created this spinoff called Fear the Walking Dead, which is now halfway through season 2. And it's just started the second half of season 2. First of all, have you been watching the show? I haven't even clarified that.
I'm trying so hard to be brief. It's like I'm scrunching up over here.
Yeah.
I hate The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead?
No, I hate The Walking Dead.
Oh, okay.
I hate it. And I also love it, but mostly I hate it.
And you always have, or it's been getting worse?
It's been getting worse. Like,
okay.
I don't know if the show's been getting worse or my tolerance is just, like, being worn away.
Sure.
I just find it so inconsistent. There are episodes of that show that are fabulous and episodes that are terrible.
Yeah.
And you can have 3 terrible ones in a row or it can go back and forth. I just get so annoyed with how inconsistent it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, I gave this new one a chance.
Okay.
So I did watch the first season of Fear the Walking Dead.
Okay.
And that's where my answer gets really boring.
Okay.
Because I watched it. I liked it well enough. I thought it was a good change of pace from what I wasn't liking about the other one. And then I taped the first few episodes, DVR'd the first few episodes of the second season with the intent to watch them, and then just like didn't bother and erase them. And really? So I haven't watched the second season. I have no intention of. And I'm desperately trying to not watch the next season of Walking Dead. But I am going to because I'm a sucker. Yeah, laugh it up, Chuckles.
Is there any part of you that enjoyed the cliffhanger from last season of Walking Dead? Is interested to see how it's going to play out?
Yes, I enjoyed it. Yes.
You got me.
Well, it's funny because a lot of times I find that The Walking Dead does a terrible job of those finales, or now the mid-season finale, which has grown so popular. I find that they really don't do a good job. They either miss the point entirely, or they do that thing where, like, the episode when they come back is the one that should have been the one they left on. And you just get this feel again. And there's nothing worse than when you're putting your trust into people to entertain you, this idea that they don't quite know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to waste my time with people who are, you know, misusing that trust by just not flailing all over the place with their storytelling. And that show really flails a lot.
Well, what about the difference between the feature film versus the internet TV show, which it seems is still the case at this point? They're generally released all at once, like a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, versus episodic television, which I guess it's probably shot and put together. I'm not sure actually how it works these days with episodic television, but my question is feature films versus episodic cable television versus like Stranger
the
Things. Here's
thing.
Eight episodes released.
Yeah.
Is there a difference in terms of the execution when it can become really protracted with episodic television and you just keep doing season after season? Like when it's a film, it's a self-contained thing.
Yeah.
Is this where film is better than episodic television? Because they're not wondering how it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
Like they decide that hopefully and then create the thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I've been throwing some shade on TV shows for a long time for their pacing and their inconsistency in terms of writing. And it may just be part of that animal that if you're doing, like Lost, I thought Lost was terrible in that regard as well, and its inconsistency. And maybe it's just because you have to do 10, 12, 24 episodes.
You're chasing ratings, right?
Right. And there's a lot of things. But then you watch shows that are really, really great, and there's such a high bar. And yet, to answer your question, a lot of those are on Netflix. A lot of those are the ones you can binge. And so maybe things like House of Cards, maybe it's great. Maybe it's even better because you can consume it all at once and you don't have that week in between to pick it apart and wonder what they're going to do and have emotional reactions beyond your initial reaction. There might be something to that.
What do you think about, it's sort of related to that question, what do you think about show, I guess, I don't know what we're calling them right now, I guess internet / TV shows. So they still call them TV shows,
yeah,
even though there's no television involved except the TV you watch it on potentially. But these internet episodic shows, what do you think about them being released all at once versus episodically? Because am I right that there's now some shows, I think, on Netflix which actually are released on a weekly basis?
I don't think I've watched one. It's totally possible. But I'm a big fan of variety and choice, I think, as most of us are. So if you put out a show all at once, then I can binge watch it.
Yeah.
But I can also watch it whenever I want. There's shows right now that I've been watching for years. I just watch an episode once in a while. And that's also, to get back to this point, why I hate spoilers. Because in a world where everything comes out for you to choose how you want to watch it, we need to respect each other. Not everybody watches it the first bloody day. Some of us watch it over time. And a spoiler that you think is now okay, after three, it's been out for 3 months, I can spoil it if I want to. That's not cool, man. I'm watching 19 shows right now.
Well, it's interesting, again, because with a film, you might not be somebody that watches it in the theaters. You might watch it a few months later.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because I go to films immediately now. I used to wait until the end of the run so there'd be nobody in the theater.
Yeah.
And now I go on opening day almost every time I want to see a film for fear it will be ruined for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boom. Is there a future when you go off Facebook? Because that could be a solution.
Yeah, I'm only on there for blog purposes.
Is it possible? I'm just trying to think whether there's a solution to this spoiler problem. If you removed Facebook from the equation,
well,
would people be ruining these movies for you?
It's funny because I stopped using Twitter as much because I was tired of having things thrown out.
Or unfollowing people, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I do. I block certain feeds for sure.
Starting with your
aunt. Whenever I smell, I don't know, that was kind of finishing.
It's like you've had a reactive process to rejecting people that have spoiled stuff for you, but maybe you need to proactively unfollow everybody.
Yeah, maybe. But I do. I do punish people severely when they spoil things for me.
When you, I don't think you blocked your aunt. I think you unfollowed her.
Yeah, totally.
When you unfollow somebody, which isn't necessarily spiteful in the way that blocking may or may not be, but when you unfollow, do you comment on it?
Let them know?
Do you let them know what they've done wrong? Or do you just, is it a sort of subtle
just
gesture?
Let me think if I should lie about this or not. I definitely don't let them know. They have no idea. Well, right now, I guess she knows now if she listens to the show.
Because you know what? It's like we're such a polite society, especially here in Canada. I think oftentimes we don't say what we really mean. How are people supposed to learn and do better if there's no learning happening?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it's incumbent on you in the interest of just creating a better society where spoilers happen less mm-hmm. for everybody, including yourself, that you educate people when you unfollow them, be like, you've been unfollowed. Mm-hmm. Here's why. Don't do it again to me or generally.
Well, it's funny that you should ask that of me because I'm... You jerk.
You jerk. You did it again.
I used to be Captain America, man. I used to... whenever I'd smell injustice and sense it, I would... I'm the guy who tells the guy in the movie theater to turn his phone off. I'm the guy. And I got so wary of it. The idea that I have to teach other people how to not be dill holes.
The teacher.
It's so absurd.
It is.
You know, like I remember playing in a hockey league and I had to quit that because there was a point where I was just holding two people apart. They were trying to fight each other and I was just holding their collars and I was standing there.
Like, this is my exercise for the week.
Like wondering, why am I here? Right? At the theater, I'm trying to accept that people are going to do what they want a little bit more because I don't want that stress. I don't want the combativeness. I have no desire. I don't get anything from being the guy who says, turn off your phone, man. I don't get anything from that.
I do. You know? I do. Well, I enjoy it.
Maybe
I haven't done it as much as you have. And there would be a threshold.
The fuel for me is wrong. I get riled up about the injustice of it. And so it's not coming from a good place. It comes from like an adrenaline place.
Right.
And it ruins my experience. I have to let that then calm down.
Yeah.
And that's not cool. I think maybe if someone like you like it and you're doing it for the right reasons, maybe it's
I think it's probably I just haven't done it as much.
Mm-hmm.
There was the other day I live in a 14-story apartment building and there's surrounded by other tall apartment buildings, and in the alley there was a couple having a lover's quarrel
mm-hmm.
at like 2 or 3 in the morning
right.
on like a Wednesday. And for the first 5 or 10 minutes of them shrieking and yelling at each other, I was just like intrigued by the fact that I was going to have to be the person to tell them to move along.
That's funny,
even though I was convinced, given how loud they were, and this is in an alley, and the sounds.
Someone else would do it first.
Well, no, I was convinced that this was disturbing.
Oh, I see.
Probably hundreds of people. Yeah. I thought, this is amazing.
But you knew that it was going to
be. But I did enjoy, and I thought, you know, I was angry about it, and I thought about how quickly it could escalate, like when people are already upset, and if you're, you know, you join the conversation, it could get really quite intense. I thought, how do I want to approach this? And I literally was just like, hey. And they stopped talking. I was like, go somewhere else. Like, I was direct and firm, but I actually wasn't overtly hostile. I didn't cuss. I didn't threaten. And I thought, I just figured out how to solve famine.
I can totally...
and war.
I can totally relate to what you just described. I very much, when I look back on all the times I've done that, I end up being very direct. That seems to be the right choice. Because you don't want to come across too aggressive, because some people can rise to that. But you also don't want to seem too weak. So you say, I remember the last guy at the movie theater, I said, turn your phone off. It's distracting.
Yeah. And just state the situation clearly. Folks, you've been listening, and now we're talking. We're just quickly wrapping up the show right now. Gareth's going to be coming in for his show, More Than Human. That starts in a couple minutes. But I want to do what we always do, Keith, at this point in the show. I want to ask, what did we learn? We've got 60 seconds to discuss. What did we learn this week?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that we don't watch enough news.
We don't watch the news. We don't listen to the news. We don't read the news. We talked about you reading 1984, which you're actually listening to.
Yeah. Right now, actually.
Right now, during this whole episode, and is there anything else that's happened that you want to comment on from this week?
Well, there was that pickle jar.
Well, how about this? Let's acknowledge the fact, again, this is the 10th episode of Now We're Talking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We thank you very much for listening.
Yeah.
We've enjoyed doing the show. We're going to continue to do the show. This is basically the end of the summer session of the show. Next week, the show is preempted. There's some other activities happening here at the station. But we'll be back in 2 weeks, and we look forward to seeing you then. So,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.